This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Joe Biden met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House on Thursday. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
Biden pressed for a ceasefire to the nine-month-old war in Gaza.
There are gaps that remain.
White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby said the administration was working to get both Israel and Hamas to agree to a ceasefire proposed by Biden that would halt fighting and see the release of Israeli hostages taken captive during Hamas's surprise attack on October 7th. The U.S. is a major arms supplier to Israel. Biden took the rare step earlier this year of pausing the transfer of certain munitions it deemed inappropriate for warfare in the densely populated Gaza Strip.
Zachary Goldman reporting. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris said on Thursday she's ready to debate Donald Trump. The AP's Sagar Magani has the story.
Voters deserve to see the split screen that exists in this race on a debate stage.
Harris notes Trump and President Biden agreed on two debates. One already happened, and the next was to be hosted by ABC News on September 10th.
Now it appears he's backpedaling.
Trump has said he'd prefer to shift that debate to Fox News, but would still be willing to debate Harris more than once.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Sagar Magani at the White House.
A Hong Kong court Thursday rejected a bid by lawyers of jail pro-democracy publisher Jimmy Lai to end his ongoing national security trial, saying it believes prosecutors do have enough evidence to support the three charges against Lai. Lai's national security trial began in Hong Kong in December of last year. It is set to resume in November when Lai is expected to present his evidence. Press freedoms groups have condemned Lai's trial as a sham, and the British and U.S. government have called for his immediate release. For more news, join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. A raging wildfire has devastated a western Canadian tourist town as firefighters work to save as many buildings as possible. We have more on that story from Reuters' Freddie Joyner.
Alberta Premier Danielle Smith choked back tears at a news conference Thursday as she described the impact of a raging wildfire that has devastated the western Canadian tourist town of Jasper.
We're seeing potentially 30 to 50% structural damage. We don't know particularly which structures have been damaged and which ones have been destroyed, but that's going to be a significant rebuild and significant displacement for a long period of time.
Jasper is in the middle of mountainous Jasper National Park in the province of Alberta. The town and the park, which draw more than 2 million tourists a year, were evacuated on Monday.
The AP's Norman Hall reports, as authorities in the state of Texas have arrested a historic leader of Mexico's Sinaloa cartel. We have his story right now.
The Justice Department says Ismael El Mayo Zambada, a historic leader of Mexico's Sinaloa cartel, and Joaquin Guzman Lopez, the son of another infamous cartel leader, were arrested in El Paso on Thursday. A leader of the cartel for decades, alongside Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, Zambada was known for running the cartel's smuggling operations, but keeping a lower profile. The Drug Enforcement Administration had offered a reward of up to $15 million for information leading to his capture. The Justice Department says the Sinaloa cartel is one of the most violent and powerful drug trafficking organizations in the world. I'm Norman Hall.
Coastal provinces in eastern and southern China have upgraded their typhoon emergency responses as Typhoon Gayumi swipes the region, bringing sustained rainstorms, strong winds. Typhoon Gayumi, the third typhoon of this year, made its second landfall in China in Putian City, east of China's Fujian province, Thursday, according to the weather service there. The Paris Olympics officially began with the opening ceremony on Friday. It is the city's first Olympic Games in a century. Lisa Bryant has more from the French capital.
Roughly 15 million visitors and more than 10,000 athletes are expected for these games, but many Parisians have already left on holiday. Traditional tourists are staying away. Organizers hope these Olympics will be unforgettable. They've promised the most environmentally friendly games ever. Friday's Seine River ceremony, gathering athletes, political leaders, and global stars, will be the first ever outside a stadium. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Paris.
And for more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, July 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The name game begins as Kamala Harris considers a running mate.
The danger of an accelerating process is that things will be overlooked, mistakes will be made that a more leisurely process would have prevented, but she has no choice. She has to do it fast and get it right.
South African President Ramaphosa appoints the country's first female Chief Justice. Liberia commemorates its 177th independence anniversary today, Friday. Cracks appear in the opposition Azimio La Umoja One Kenya coalition as Martha Karua quits.
Politically, it's an inconsequential move and too little too late. He does not carry the weight or gravitas to shake the coalition like any other person.
And African women athletes aim for Olympic medals in Paris. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Who will she pick? That's the big political question in America after President Joe Biden dropped his re-election bid and Vice President Kamala Harris became the likely Democratic nominee. The selection in question is Harris's running mate against Republican Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman is at the White House and has this report.
So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
Kamala Harris, for the time being, campaigning solo for president. Among those under consideration to join her as the party's vice presidential candidate are a bunch of governors, including Roy Cooper of North Carolina, a Democrat who won twice when his state chose Republican Donald Trump for president, and Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, which both parties consider a must-win state in November. Then there's an astronaut who became a U.S. senator, Arizona's Mark Kelly. With the Democratic National Convention just weeks away, it will be a rushed process, notes Brookings Institution senior fellow William Galston.
The danger of an accelerated process is that, you know, things will be overlooked, mistakes will be made that a more leisurely process would have prevented. But she has no choice. She has to do it fast and get it right.
There's no science to getting it right. It's about selecting someone who can attract the most votes, especially in the handful of swing states likely to determine the outcome.
Ready, get set, go.
That may mean focusing on geography rather than personality. Jay Chen is a Democratic Party delegate and political activist in California.
I think someone from the Midwest or even from the South would be a good choice. Andy Beshear, he's a governor from Kentucky. I think he would make a good choice. We want to make sure that we're balancing out the ticket because we have someone from California.
That someone from California is Kamala Harris. And since political considerations rule out the presidential and vice presidential candidates coming from the same state, that rules out Governor Gavin Newsom, widely expected to be a presidential candidate in a future election. What about two women on the ticket? Gretchen Whitmer is governor of the important swing state of Michigan, but does not appear keen to make history that way.
I am not leaving Michigan. I'm proud to be the governor of Michigan. I've been consistent. I know everyone is always suspicious and asking this question over and over again. I know you're doing your job. I'm not going anywhere.
Popularity as a governor or success in Congress does not guarantee making a big splash as a running mate, notes the author of two books about the vice presidency, Joel K. Goldstein.
Are they ready to shine on the national stage, which is quite different than running in one state or one district?
The second in command is also ideally someone voters will be comfortable with, just a heartbeat away from the presidency. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
In Kenya, there appears to be cracks within the opposition Azimio La Umoja One Kenya coalition led by Raila Odinga. Martha Karua, the leader of the National Rainbow Coalition Kenya, also known as NARC Kenya, and Odinga's running mate during the 2022 presidential elections, says she's leaving the coalition. The Nation Kenya Online quotes Karua as saying that staying in Azimio was no longer tenable due to prevailing political developments. Her announcement comes after President William Ruto appointed four members of Odinga's party to the reconstituted cabinet. Joseph Kioko is a Kenyan political analyst. He tells me that Karua's departure is inconsequential.
You see, NARC Kenya has no member of parliament. MCA, the what you call the local county representative, where Martha Karua comes from, is not from her party. So politically, it's an inconsequential move and too little too late to have any effect in terms of the political direction that are shaping all the political activities within Azimio. He does not carry the weight or gravitas to shake the coalition like any other partner.
But she was the vice presidential running mate for Raila Odinga.
Yeah, she was, because she was nominated to address a particular constituency which she did not deliver. You know, had Raila Odinga stuck maybe with his previous running mate, Kalonzo Musyoka, maybe outcomes would have been different. So there are people within that coalition who performed better, who brought better votes to Raila Odinga, who come with the political clout, who come with the masses and people. Martha Karua is not one of them.
Maybe it's me, but do you notice recently that it seems that Raila Odinga is cooperating more with President William Ruto, and maybe is he doing so for his own selfish reasons, if that is the case, because, as you know, he wants to be the next chair of the African Union Commission.
You see, Raila's, in truthfulness, politics is three-quarters of selfish interest, and the ability to nationalize selfish interest is what makes one a good politician. Now, as it stands today, Raila has been fronted by the government of President Ruto as the Kenyan candidate for the position of AU. It is this government that has lobbied or is lobbying for Raila to be the chairman of AU. It is this government that is having a political crisis. So now, Raila is beholden to this government, whether through a formal arrangement or a quid pro quo kind of relationship is a different issue altogether. But Raila is beholden to this government with regard to the matter of AU position. And you've seen President Ruto has put his best foot forward in campaigning for Raila. He's put the best machinery, the Kenyan Prime Cabinet Secretary and also Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mudavadi, has set up a government secretariat to campaign for Raila Odinga. So it's a Kenyan project that we are putting one of the best Kenyans forward, supported by the government. So it would be suicidal for Raila Odinga not to support William Ruto. It would be very suicidal for Raila Odinga to be seen demonstrating against the government that is fronting his candidature for AU.
Joseph Kioko is a Kenyan political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Nairobi. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has appointed the first female Chief Justice of the country's Supreme Court. She is Mandisa Maya, who was serving as Deputy Chief Justice. Professor Sipo Sipe is a political analyst and the former Deputy Vice Chancellor for Institutional Support at the University of Zululand. He tells me the appointment is a significant achievement.
Well, she's been in the judiciary for some time now. She came into the Constitutional Court after having been the head of the Supreme Court of Appeal. Justice Maya had been inspected in a number of courts until she was appointed to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and where she became the president of the Supreme Court of Appeal. And when the position became open 2 years ago, she applied and contested the position with the current outgoing Chief Justice. In that process, she had excelled very well, and she was the only one recommended for the position of Chief Justice. Actually, the outgoing Chief Justice was a West performer, but the current president, for reasons known to him, decided to ignore the recommendation of the panel that was selecting the person to become the next Chief Justice. And as a way of accommodation, he was then appointed to become the Deputy Chief Justice in the place of the outgoing Chief Justice, who was then a Deputy Chief Justice. So it was more a way of Ramaphosa trying to say, yes, I can hear the recommendation, but I've got my own person. So for political reasons, he decided to choose a different Chief Justice who was never recommended. So now, with his term having come to an end, it became obvious that the person who was initially recommended for the position would be the next. And when the panel met, they simply endorsed the position that they had taken much earlier, about 2 years ago, hence her appointment as the next Chief Justice and the first female to be the Chief Justice of South Africa.
Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst and a former Deputy Vice Chancellor for Institutional Support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 26th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Something O'Malley Sports. Liberia is commemorating its 177th independence anniversary today, July 26. Information Minister Gerald Limekepia tells me that unlike years past, Liberians will be celebrating in good spirits.
People are going about preparing to celebrate the country. Business places are jam-packed. More importantly, you see a sense of relief, a sense of freedom. And so generally, people are happy because Liberia is taking a new direction about it that pleases a bulk of the citizens. And so the mood is good. As a government, we've done what we are supposed to do to create the space, to create the environment, to empower the people, particularly those working in the public sector, even those who are not working in the public sector, for our business people. Some of the indebtedness that we inherited as a government, we managed to pay some so that they too can pay their workers, and by that you have more money in the economy. So yes, things are good. The mood is good.
You know, in the past, coming to the 26th celebration, the complaint has been that civil servants are not paid. What is it now, this year?
We have not been discussing payment of civil servants because that is not an activity that should take place only at Christmas or 26, etc. So as a government, since we came to power in January, as of July, we are current. We pay civil servants 100% up to where we are. So it's not something that is bordered on whether you are having a celebration or a festive season. No, people go to work every day. When the month ends, they get paid. So we've been doing that very effectively. And the process that has been put in place is such that as of the 15th of every month, people start to get a light in their different banks that their salaries have been deposited because the system of payment we have is direct deposit and we're very current from January to July.
Mr. Pia, so I was just speaking with the Honorable Koluba, a member of the House of Representatives. He said, Butte, building a new Liberia is just for a few Liberians. He mentioned nepotism in employment, corruption that is worse than the previous government.
So I'm not sure whether I want to respond to the name you call. I mean, it's easy for anybody to jump and stay in the street and say corruption is that. I think sometimes you who do the interview actually ask questions. What's the evidence? You know, anybody can jump and say James Butte is corrupt. James Butte is this. I mean, the talks are very cheap. So when leaders of the country speak in those kinds of ways with no evidence to back up what they say, it's up to them. But I have made it my duty not to be paying attention to everything that somebody wants to say, especially so when I don't see substance.
Liberia's Information Minister Gerald Limek Pia was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia, as Liberia celebrates its 177th independence today, Friday. An opposition member of parliament says there is gloom in the country because some civil servants have not been paid, but the government says they have, and that the country is in a good mood and ready to celebrate. However, Representative Yeka Koluba, once a staunch critic of former President George Weah, is urging me not to believe what the government says.
The country is very tough. Our people have not taken pay. Some people have not taken pay for more than 3-4 months. It doesn't even appear like it should have done it. The living condition of our people is very bad because of the way the government is proceeding.
But I understand, Honorable, that some civil servants have been paid.
Well, not to my knowledge. I don't know about that. It's not to my knowledge. They will tell you they have been paid. Can they tell you which one the civil servants have been paid and you check it out with them? Don't let us officials give you information. We don't give credible information because we are in the government. We don't want the international world to know what is happening in the government. But it's not to my knowledge, not that I know of, or any civil servant that I'm taking pay.
Now, the theme of this 177th Independence Anniversary is building a new Liberia for all Liberians. Well, what is your take on the theme?
Well, I don't see building new Liberia for all Liberians. We are building new Liberia for few people. The people that will have money to enjoy themselves. The people that will be in authority. The people that will be in power. I don't see the commoners that we should be building a new Liberia for enjoying themselves. I have not seen it. The country has not reached that point. And I don't think under Joseph Boakai, the country will reach that point.
You are also a member of the House of Representatives. What are you doing in the House of Representatives to make sure Liberians have the means of enjoying?
So we are trying our best, but you know the executive is the implementer. For us, we are there to make laws. We are there to put money in the budget, to reach down to our people. You know, an executive is to implement. Is the executive implementing? No, I'm not seeing it. What we see is former officials enriching themselves, the executive. We employ our family people. We are not looking at the commoners, the people that voted for us. If you found people in Liberia that say they are enjoying, yes, they are because they are closer to us. They are our relatives. They are our friends. They are our associates. So they have to enjoy because we are in possession of the money.
Where do you think the country is now in terms of fighting corruption?
How can you fight corruption when yourself is corrupt? We are corrupt. The government is corrupt. So you can't fight corruption. What we see the people doing is witch hunt.
Yeka Koluba is an opposition member of the Liberian House of Representatives. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The 2024 Olympics begin today, Friday, with more than 10,000 athletes gathering in Paris, dreaming of winning gold, silver, or bronze. Among them will be dozens of African women, many of whom have overcome major social and economic challenges to get to Paris. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
For the first time in history, the International Olympic Committee, or IOC, said it achieved full gender parity on the field of play at this year's Olympics. Female athletes, who once made up only about 2% of Olympic competitors, are now present in the same numbers as men. They accounted for 48% of the athletes at the Olympics in Tokyo 3 years ago, which was delayed a year because of COVID. Several dozen African women are among those who will compete. Esti Olivier pedals on the canoe team for South Africa. She is competing at the Olympics for the first time after missing the Tokyo Games due to physical and mental health problems.
It's about just keeping focus now and not being overwhelmed by the enormous atmosphere that the Olympic brings, but enjoying small increments and moments every step of the way for me at this stage.
Canoeing is not a popular sport in Africa. However, canoe teams from Angola, Egypt, Morocco, Nigeria, South Africa and Tunisia will be representing the continent at the Olympics. Olivier says training for the sport is tough on women.
Much of this journey I've done by myself, and because there are so few females participating in canoe sprints in South Africa, I've always had to train among men. So it's definitely a challenge. The lack of support is a challenge, and just juggling private life with sport, you know, just because we can't only focus on being an athlete. As a woman, I have to also be a wife.
Despite the progress made by women athletes, Many of the challenges that slow women's progress in sports still persist, including lack of equal pay, discrimination, and poor training conditions. 25-year-old middle-distance runner Lillian Odira of Kenya, who is competing in the 800 meters, says it was a long journey getting to Paris, but one that was worth the effort.
Sports opened so many doors for me. It's given me the confidence to be who I am. It's given me the confidence to speak out against injustices that I might witness at any point in time. It's given me the opportunity to be an absolute role model to young girls wanting to achieve something big in their lives.
Kenya is sending about 20 female athletes to Paris, second only to South Africa, which is sending 24. African women won 17 medals in Tokyo 3 years ago and hope to collect even more in France. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is something. Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, something.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the Paris Olympic Games, which gets underway later today. Some events, however, got started on Wednesday and continued through to Thursday. In rugby, the South African National Sevens, the Springbok Sevens side, produced the upset of the Olympic Games tournament as they gave their heart and soul for a 14-7 win over top-seeded New Zealand on Thursday night to book their place in the semi-finals. The Blitzboks will now face France in the semi-final in the match that will see them come in as underdogs. Staying with Thursday's proceedings, it wasn't the best of times for Africa Women Football representative at the Paris game as Nigeria's Super Falcons made their long-awaited return to Olympic football after a 16-year absence. But their Paris 2024 campaign got off to a disappointing start with a 1-0 loss to Brazil in their opening match. The game's decisive moment came in the first half when Gabriela Nunes Silva unleashed a ferocious strike that proved to be the only goal of the contest. The defeat marks a challenging start for Randy Waldron's side, who find themselves in a formidable Group C alongside reigning world champions Spain and Asian powerhouse Japan. Zambia, the other African side at a women's football event, lost their opening encounter to the United States as Mallory Swanson scored a pair of goals just moments apart in the first half as the United States women national team opened their Olympic Games tournament with a 3-0 victory over the Copper Queens of Zambia. On Wednesday, it was a turn for the men as Morocco stunned Argentina with a 2-1 victory in their opening Group B football men encounter. Two goals by Sofiane Rahimi helped the North African side showcased resilience and tactical discipline to overcome the South American giants in a match filled with drama and excitement. Elsewhere, Mali's never-say-die attitude saw the West African side salvage a point in what could have easily been a victory over Israel in their opening match, making their second Olympics appearance since their quarterfinal finish as debut 2 decades ago. The Eagles of Mali kicked off their campaign with an impressive showing that saw them come from behind to salvage a point at the Parc des Princes Stadium in Paris. Away from the Olympic Games now, Morocco striker Youssouf El Nesri has signed a 5-year contract with Fenerbahce after spending 4 years at Sevilla. The Turkish club, coached by Jose Mourinho, announced that they will pay $21.2 million over 4 years for the 27-year-old Moroccan, who becomes the biggest transfer in the history of the Turkish Super League. Netted 73 goals in 196 appearances for Sevilla, with whom he won the Europa League in 2020 and 2023. And that does it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.